For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, welcome everyone. So this week is Parsha Shmini, but it's also the day before Rosh Chodesh. And one thing about, I guess that we're always going to ask ourselves when we read a Haftorah is why, how does it connect to the Parsha? Basically, the non-Jews made a decree that we were not allowed to read from the Torah. And so, how could we have a time when we couldn't read from the Torah? So the way we got around the decree, so to speak, was the rabbis enacted that we should read from the prophets with a similar theme of the Torah reading. And so during that time of persecution where the synagogues were forbidden from the Torah reading, they were able to read the prophets, and they selected different prophets that were the same theme or the same ideas that were in the Torah reading. Now, eventually this decree was nullified, and there's a very interesting thing that's called liturgical revenge. In other words, we take revenge that even now that we have our Torah reading back, we still read the Haftorah. Because they wanted us not to learn the lessons of the Torah, and therefore they made these decrees, and we, the Jewish people, Hashem gave us the tenacity, we're a stiff-necked people, to keep the Torah in different, amidst different challenges and different environments, and so we came up with different ways that we could find to study, no matter what challenges the Gentiles placed in front of us. And there is a value to seeing a Torah thought through the eyes of the prophets. Sometimes it's a little more poetic, which is always more interesting if it's in poetry. It also makes it more mystical when it's poetic. The Torah is very blunt and very to the, if you do this, you will die. And if you, it's not, the prophets are much more mystical, and there's much more hidden there. And so it enables you to distill the lesson, so to speak. Now, usually the reason for the Haftorah is almost always hidden in the first line, very often. So, for example, in the Haftorah for Shabbos HaGadol mentions Shabbos HaGadol, the Shabbos Teshuvah also mentions Shabbos Teshuvah. Here, the first line mentions Machar Chodesh. Tomorrow will be Rosh Chodesh. And this is the Haftorah for the times when Shabbos, whenever the Shabbos comes out before Rosh Chodesh. Now, the really, really interesting thing is, today, for the most part, we no longer celebrate Rosh Chodesh, meaning we have it on the calendar, we know when it occurs, we say the special prayers for Rosh Chodesh, but in very rare occasions do we really notice what happens on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh was a special holiday, and when we had our own land and our own people, it had a unique way of celebrating it, and by and large, it's gone lost. We no longer think of Rosh Chodesh as it used to be celebrated. And different people have tried to have Rosh Chodesh parties and Rosh Chodesh groups to try to reinstitute the feeling of Rosh Chodesh. But it's not, we can see from the works of old that Rosh Chodesh was a special time. One we're going to see from this Haftorah, but one of the famous things was when the Shunammit, the woman from Shunam, whose child looked like he had passed away, and she ran to the prophet to ask for his help. So the question they asked, they said, How come she came? It's not Shabbos, it's not Rosh Chodesh. In other words, people would go on the holidays, it's not a holiday, but Rosh Chodesh was a holiday. And here we're going to see that there was a question about if the king was angry with David or not. And so basically, they said, you know what, let's figure this out, because Rosh Chodesh was the big holiday gathering. It was the big powwow. And then we'll find out how the king feels about you, because Rosh Chodesh is coming. And so the reason why the Haftorah is chosen is that it's a, to us, with the fact that Rosh Chodesh is coming is very significant. On the day before Rosh Chodesh, there are prayers. It's called Yom Kippur Katan. the minor Yom Kippur. And Rosh Chodesh, in certain ways, is like a mini Rosh Hashanah. Time passes, and you know, we just had another Pesach, and if we're not careful, we don't. Time passes by too quickly, and we don't accomplish the things we would like to, and or we don't fix. Maybe we made mistakes, or we hurt people's feelings, and we have to fix them, and we forget to apologize or to say sorry or to. And it's if you don't have time to really think about it, you just. Time goes by and it never happens. I met someone the other day who was upset at me about something, and I was shocked. It totally didn't even occur to me that a person would be upset at me, but I just didn't have a time to think about it. I hadn't seen him for a while, and I was happy that I saw him because I apologized to him and I explained to him I didn't mean it, whatever, but it would have never occurred to me that I had done something that offended him, or it would have, but you need time to think about things. And that's what really Rosh Chodesh is. It's like a taking stock. It's a monthly renewal. And really, the very first mitzvah given to the Jewish people was Rosh Chodesh. That's what was given to the Jewish people in Egypt. It's the idea of renewal. It's the idea that a new month is coming, and newness is so important to us. It means sometimes you have to let bygones be bygones and turn over a new leaf. And if last month wasn't so good, well, this is a new month. It could be better. We're optimistic. Things can change. Things can be better. It's also an idea that we fall into patterns and we develop habits and we say, oh, I can't change. Yeah, no, you could change. It's a new month. It's a new moon. We reinvent ourselves. It's a very important concept. To be able to have renewal, to be able to, and so therefore, for us, the idea that, well, the moon disappeared and now it's a new moon. It's a totally different. Now, even though we know it's not really a new moon, it's the old moon, but we're also the old moon. But we have the ability to become new. We have the ability to change and to become different and to accomplish things, and all of that is kind of built into the Rosh Chodesh theme. So let's see how it fits in over here. What's happened is that David HaMelech is a son-in-law to King Saul, and his brother-in-law and his good friend is Yonasan, the main son of King Saul. And Saul begins, ever since he sinned with Amalek and lost his right to be king, so to speak, he starts having his own demons, if that's the right word. He starts having a ruach ra, like a bad spirit. A paranoia that comes over him. He starts being afraid of things. And it's very interesting. Today we have different people have mental challenges. We're going to see that at one time he tried dealing with it with music. Music therapy. You know, people get depressed, turn on the music. It helps, you know. But you have to try to stop. If a person sees that they feel a certain way, and sometimes it's genetic or it's chemical, or a person has to try to change that or has to deal with that. But Saul started getting paranoid and started seeing David as an enemy. In the middle of David was a composer. He wrote the Book of Tehillim, and he was the sweet singer of Israel. He had beautiful songs, and he used to play for Saul when Saul got in these really bad moods, and he would cheer him up. Now, what happened was that Saul, once David was playing, and when you sing and you're into your music, you don't actually see the people around you. You're so a really good musician is so focused on his music. He's not looking out and watching the people, and he's looking into his music. He's hearing the next note, how it sounds, how he. So David was playing his music, and he's, you know, getting in there, and all of a sudden he he does one of these, and the spear comes right over, and just misses him. And Saul, somehow he saw David at that moment as an enemy. He saw something in him, and he decided that. And a king is allowed to defeat his enemies. It is true that David ultimately would become the next king. So Saul wasn't wrong. It's just that Saul thought that David would become the next king by assassinating Saul. And David was the opposite. When David had the chance to kill Saul, he didn't. But Saul didn't see that. All he saw was that this person who was great in war and who people sang the praises of David... And, by the way, some people say it started when people sang David's praises more than they did Saul. If you remember when they came back from the battles, everybody was singing about how great David was. And it's amazing sometimes what jealousy, how jealousy can destroy things. Sometimes you can have a good relationship and jealousy gets in there and there's just no explanation for it because jealousy is this terrible force. But it's hard for us to say what it was because if Hashem sent him a paranoia, it could be he would have, you know, there's nothing you could do about that. There's some people that are going to be jealous or paranoid of you, and it's nothing that you did. It's just it's something that got over them, that they don't trust anybody anymore. They can't be friendly with anybody. They can't enjoy people. They're always afraid. So this had happened, and David was concerned because you can't have. It's not that many times that you duck right before the spear gets you. So the question was what to do. So David had a consult with his good friend and his brother-in-law, Yonasan. And Yonasan said the following, Mocher Chodesh, tomorrow will be Rosh Chodesh, v'nifgadati. Then at that time, that's the time when we have the big powwow, and you will be, every person, every people of the royal family or people in of the generals, everybody had their place at the royal setting, and we will see what happens if you're not there. Ki yifkad moshevecha, if no one's in your seat, we'll get an idea how Shaul HaMelech thinks about you. So I saw from Rabbi Schwab that what he understood was that Rosh Chodesh is a time of reflection. It's a time, well, we had the old month, and now we have a new month starting. And normally, Shaul should have thought, you know what? I had threatened my good friend David, who has been loyal to me and who had risked his life for me and had done great things for the Jewish people. I had tried to kill him. I better apologize to him because it's Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is that time where we take stock. So Yohanan was saying, you know, give my father a chance. There's a rule that with good, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody. But good people, if they make a mistake, they feel bad about it. Give them a chance. Of course they didn't mean to hurt someone. Of course they would feel bad if they realized they did something wrong. But give them a chance. So what Yonasan was saying was, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, and my father's going to do introspection, and I'm sure he's going to realize it was wrong when he tried to kill you. Don't let that bother you. What's a little trying to kill someone between friends, you know? I'm sure he's going to regret what he did. And when he sees that you're there, then we'll see what happens. So let's see, second verse. V'shilasta terid ma'od. What you should do is the following. It'll be, you know, since it could be that he is trying to kill you, and we don't know, what you should do is you should go down and hide. Ubasa elamakam ashin startasham. Let's have a set place where you will hide. B'yom ha'maisa, on that day. V'yashavta, and we'll meet. Eitzel Evan ha'ezel. There'll be a certain stone, a certain kind of stone that they would meet at in secret where they could... Now, kings always had spies around them. And especially important people in the palace also were watched. So Yonasan had people that would spy on him, and courts are always filled with intrigue. I don't know why that is. If you ever study politics or you ever study, there's always people around who are listening. Now there were servants, but sometimes the servants, somebody would offer the servants a big bonus if you happened to overhear a conversation or two and let me know. So there were people around David and Yonasan, so they said, you know what? You go down in the valley, go down there, and I'll meet you by that stone. And we'll have a sign. Now, like, if David would come out and there were other people with Yonasan, that could be very dangerous. Or there could be other people having target practice. So he said, I'll shoot three arrows, and it may even be that we won't get a chance to talk. So let's come up with a message. So he said, what I'll do is I'll shoot arrows in your direction. 21. V'hinei eshlech hasanar, and I'll send out when they did target practice, they would send out a servant to bring the arrows back. If you would fight in battle in those days, it was very important that you had a good shot. Because otherwise, you know, and this was life and death for the Jewish people if you had a good, you know, a good arrow and a good... So one of the things the generals or the warriors did was they practiced the bow and arrow to have a really good... that meant the difference of life or death if you could get that right spot. And people had armor, So sometimes you had to shoot in between the head and the neck. You had to get right in the chink, you know. It was a very specific, you had to be a really good shot. It wasn't just like potluck, like you could, you know, if the arrows just go up there, they had shields and things, they could block, but somebody who was really good, you know, could get at a distance. So he said, I'm going to shoot the arrows, then I'm going to send the servant to get them. Now, listen, and apparently he would say this very loud. I think what happens is the servant would go out to get the arrows, but he wouldn't know where they were. So you would shout to the servant, I think they're a little further, you know, and so that would be like out in the field, it would echo, you know, or I think it's that, funny thing is you see that in like the golf course, you know, when they go looking for the balls, you know, I think it's over there, you know, it's further down. And so this was how he was going to be able to yell and get the message to David. So, Im Omer Lenar Hinei Achiti Mimcha, if I say that the arrows are... they're in front of you. In other words, you're too far out, and that means come back, so to speak. Take the arrows and come in and bring the arrows in. But hinei kachenu ubasa. Then you know that you can come in too. He'll take the arrows and you ki hishalom lach. That means everything is good. Ve'ein davar chai Hashem. That means everything is great. You know that this was just a misunderstanding, and we worked it all out. On the other hand, verse 22, Vim ko amar la'olam hinei achiti mimcha v'hala. On the other hand, if I tell the servant boy, no, the arrows are further out. You've got to keep on going. So that means, David, I'm sorry, you're going to have to keep on going. Lake, you should go, ki shilach Hashem, because Hashem has sent you. So this was the signal. In other words, either it's come in, or to tell the servant boy the arrows are in front of you, come back and gather the arrows, which means to tell David he can come back. Or the arrows are further out, which meant to David, keep on going out, you have to go, you have to flee. It's very dangerous for you here. That would be the message. It's very interesting. It says what in verse 22, where he says that if the message is that the arrows are further out, it means you should go, because Hashem has sent you. So it really should say you should run away. It shouldn't say Hashem has sent you. Sending you means that I'm sending you, like you're supposed to go to this place, and I send you to go to this place. But it should say go and run away because your life is in danger. Why does it say run away? Because you're a messenger of Hashem. So it's very interesting. I went to a yeshiva that was founded in the middle of Ohio, which is not a very Jewish state or very strong Jewish population. Now it's grown somewhat, but what happened was that there were two Holocaust survivors who had they saw the Nazis coming, and they wanted to try to find a way to bring the yeshiva to safety, and so they hopped on the last boat out, so to speak. And they ended up coming to America. And while they were in America, the war started. And they weren't able to find out what happened behind enemy lines, so to speak. The Nazis attacked Russia. And on the way to Russia, they went into Lithuania and Poland and those areas. And that was a war zone. And nobody knew. They didn't know about their families. They didn't know about their wives. It was kind of like not a time to do anything. They were kind of, there was nobody to talk to. They didn't speak the language. And they said, well, we're here in America, and there are not too many yeshivas. There were maybe two or three in the whole country at that time. And they said, let's teach Torah. Let's set up a school. So they said, okay, which part of New York, you know, of New York City, where are you going to go in Brooklyn? Where are you going to go in Williamsburg? They said, no, we're going to go someplace that doesn't have a yeshiva. And so they plotted themselves down in the middle of Ohio in a place called Wycliffe, which it ended up being, it's only about 30 miles from where I was born, where I lived, and a number of people, and they said there's no yeshiva anywhere in Ohio. In fact, there really weren't any yeshivas outside of New York City at that time, and there were two Holocaust survivors, didn't speak the language, and they were given a group of boys to teach. Most of them only had been to Hebrew school, had never learned Talmud. And they started a yeshiva, and eventually became a very large and popular yeshiva, Telshi yeshiva, that was in Cleveland. And Because of that, many boys like me who were from Cleveland or from Akron or Toledo or Columbus who would have never gone to a yeshiva, would have never gone, you know, far away to New York City. But once you have a yeshiva in your backyard, if you enjoy learning and you have a yeshiva in your backyard, you're going to stumble over it sooner or later and you'll have a chance to study. And that's what happened. And there were many, many communities and people. The chief rabbi of South Africa came from Tells, from that group of students that they taught in that time. And that South Africa also has had many communities that have come back to Judaism since then and other places. But basically, after 3-4 years after the war, when the Russians started defeating the Nazis, they came back to the communities that had been overrun, and they were hoping that the people were still alive. Mm-hmm. And community after community, the Nazis had wiped out whoever was left. And they found out one of them had lost a wife and 8 children, and one had lost a wife and 10 children, and they were like devastated. And everybody they knew, every single person they had known, was killed. They rebuilt, but they said that they thought that they were running away, but really they were being sent by Hashem to rebuild Torah in Ohio. That was kind of the message. So sometimes you think you're running away from something, but really you're being sent. And so that was what they saw in this verse over here. This is sent by the rabbi who, you know, that he and his brother-in-law thought they were running away. They weren't running away. They were being sent there on purpose. And I had a... and sometimes there's this idea sometimes happens where sometimes you get stuck in a city, you know, the plane gets delayed or stops in the wrong city, or you end up in a place that you didn't expect. And you say, what am I doing here? Well, we believe that Hashem sends a person somewhere for a purpose. So you might think you made a wrong turn. You might think you got off on the wrong spot on the train, or you got a... But wherever you go, you're being sent by Hashem. We don't always know why, but we believe that Hashem puts us wherever we are for a reason. And sometimes we find ourselves in the funniest of places, and sure, sometimes we're able to see the reason. We're glad we went because we met someone we hadn't seen for many years, or we made a contact, or we were able to encourage someone, or we were able to help someone. We never know why, but we believe that when we're running away, we're also being sent by Hashem. We have different jobs to do. And so if we find ourselves somewhere, go because you're being sent by Hashem. But anyway, that was the message here in verse 22.
So where did David go?
So we'll see where David went. So he ran away, and he ran away to the caves. Well, at first, we'll see, there's a whole story. First, he stopped at the priest to get some food, and that turned out to be a mistake, actually. And there's really also another interesting lesson. It's so interesting how there are different lessons in places where you least expect them. What happens is that Yonasan sends David out. We're going to see it shortly. And David has to run away, and because he ran away on short notice and he'd been 3 days in the forest without any real food, and kosher is not easy if you're in the forest because you have to, you can't just shoot an animal, you have to, you know, slit the neck, you can't just shoot a bear or whatever, you gotta slit the neck, and then you gotta soak it in salt, and you know, if you don't have salt, you can't get the blood out, you know, or you gotta roast it. You can't roast it if you're a fugitive because you can't have a fire, and it's a little complicated to keep kosher and be a fugitive and running away. And so David really didn't have food for 3 days. And so he decided that he would stop he knew that there was a place of priests, of people that had a special service of Hashem, and he stopped there. And what happened was that Shaul later on found out that the priests gave David food. And Shaul was paranoid. And so he decided that, the priests are in cahoots with David. And he ended up killing some of them, which is just... and it was because of his paranoia, too. Not because they did anything wrong. They had no idea that David was a fugitive. They thought David was Joseph. So what was the lesson the Gemara says? This is a Jewish mother's lesson. That when you send somebody away, you should have sent them with food. You don't send some... You know, if Yonasan had given David just a little bit of food, then he wouldn't have had to stop by the priests and get the food over there, and then Shaul wouldn't have been suspicious of the priests. And all of that happened because when someone comes to visit, you send them away, give them, take some food with you. That's the... And so that lesson has been learned, you know. The Jewish mothers know when somebody goes, take some food with you, you know. That was the The Talmud has a whole page on this about Jonas and Goof by not, you know, didn't internalize. Because had he just thought, he wasn't even thinking about that. You know, that's a man thing, not to worry about what's he going to eat, you know. Oh, I'll find something out in the forest. What was he going to find, some berries or something? You know, if he had given David a little bit of food, history would have been different.
Also, Hashem will provide.
That's right, Hashem will provide. So I'm sure they worried about life and death. They didn't think about the practical things of what are they going to eat. But sometimes you need someone to think about these things. So let's see, 23. And they had a covenant between the two that no matter what would happen between them, they would always be friends. They would always have a covenant between the two of them forever. 24. So David hid in the field. And sure enough, it came Rosh Chodesh. And the king started the party. He broke bread. That's always the first thing. He makes the motzi. The king. That's, by the way, that's where we have a custom that you honor the person to make the motzi. You, that's an honor to be the one who makes the first person to make the blessing. So the king went to the bread, and the bread is the first thing you eat, right? You always wash on bread. That starts the meal. So we have that right here. The king went to the bread to eat. Now, believe me, the king had more than bread, but he made the motzi, so to speak. But Yashiv Melech HaMashoven, the king went to his place. The king probably had a throne, just like he always went. Kapam Bapama, Moshe Vakir. V'yakam Yonasan, v'yeshiv Avner mitzad Shul. Now, the closer you were to the king, the better, you know, the higher spot you had in the government. In other words, the top people sat next to the king. There was Yonasan's seat and Avner's seat. V'yifkad Malkam David. And David's chair was empty. 26. V'lodibar Shom Uma b'yamahu. And Shul didn't ask anything about where David was. Now, at a gathering where there's only, like, you know, a few people, of course, if somebody's seat is empty, you would ask, where is so-and-so? But the king didn't say anything. He omra mikrahu. He thought, you know what, every now and then somebody could miss a meal. You know, maybe they're not feeling well. Maybe bilti tahor, maybe he's not pure. It's interesting also, there are certain laws about eating foods in purity, eating special foods that are grown in the land of Israel. And you see they kept these rules because at the king's table he said, you know what, maybe David didn't come because he didn't have a chance to. When you fought in battle, sometimes you came in contact with a dead person. And you had to wait a certain amount of days to purify yourself if you came in contact with a dead person. Sometimes you came in contact with dead animals and creatures. It was, you know, fighting, being a warrior had a lot of pitfalls and things. And so he thought, you know what, David's not here today. 27. So then it came the second day, Rosh Chodesh. V'yikud Malkam David. And David wasn't there. And V'yomer Shaul Yonasan beno, and Shaul said to Yonasan, his son, Madua lo ba ben Yishai, where is that ben Yishai? How come he didn't come? Gam tamo, he wasn't here yesterday. Gam hayom el alechem. You know, when you're invited to the king's table, you can't not show up. You know, you don't stand up the king. So he says to Yonasan, where is he? And verse 28. V'yan Yonasan Shaul nishol dove and meimi. He said, David asked me permission to excuse himself from this particular occasion. Ad Beis Lechem, he wanted to go home to Bethlehem, which wasn't that far away, to spend the holidays with his family. V'yomer, and he said, Shalcheni na, please let me go, ki zevach mishpacha lanu, my mishpacha is having a get-together where my family is having a thing, b'ir v'hu tziva li achi, when my brothers want him to come, v'ati imatzachen, you know, if I found favor in your eyes, please, Emma, let me just go there and let me see my brothers, I miss them, I haven't seen them in a long time, al kein lo ba'al shulchan ha-melech. I really would love to be at the king's table, but, you know, family things, you got, you know, sometimes you have a family obligation, you want to go. So that's what, that was the story that Yonasan told his father, Shaul. Now, Shaul could, first of all, he knew when his son wasn't telling him total truth. Even Yonasan, like, you know, fathers know their sons a little bit, but Yichar Av Shaul but Yonasan. And Shaul is very angry because Shaul had, last time he saw David, he tried to kill him. And if David had shown up, I'm sure he would have tried to kill him again. So Shaul gets very angry with his son, Yonasan, and he sent Ben Navis Amardis. It's funny, he blames it on Yonason's mother. Shaul had more than one wife, and so when, I always knew it was your mother's fault, you know, you're the son of a rebellious woman, so to speak. That was the, that's a big insult when even to this day, if you insult your person's mother, that's like, you could say whatever you want, but you insult my mother, man, that's like, you say your mother wears army boots, that was like the, you don't do that, but Shaul really like, Yonason could tell he was angry. He would have never said that. He was insulting his wife. He's called him, he said, oh, you're a rebellious son. Now, basically, if the king had several wives, and he had children from the different wives, and normally the king's son would replace the king. Now, if the mother was not a good person, then that son wouldn't be worthy. And so what he was saying was, if you don't get to be king, it's going to be an embarrassment to your mother. They're going to say she goofed. Normally, you would be the first choice to be the next king. And if you let David stay alive, then you're going to embarrass yourself and your mother's family. You're the one who has the most to lose. And that's what Shaul was saying to him. And he says it like he's like, you're uncovering the shame of your mother. It's like really a verse 21, Ki kola yamim. There's a whole story, too, about Shaul, Yonason's mother, and some people say she proposed to Shaul before the... It's a story. I don't know if we'll have time for it today about how they met and what...
The women came out to pick their husbands?
Yeah. It was a whole interesting thing over there that happened, yeah. But either way, Ki kola yamim. And he says to him, very simple, 31, as long as Ben Yishai is alive, lo tochen ato machusecha, you and your kingship will never be settled, and David is a threat to you, and we have to do, it's our requirement, because Hashem made us the king, and a king is required to ensure the stability of his throne. And you should know, as long as David is alive, you will never be stable. And you better, I command you, get David and bring him here, and we're going to execute him. So Shaul was clear as could be as what he intended to do to David. Now I just want to go back a little, just want to show you a verse that's just kind of interesting. When he's asking where David is, in verse 27, when Shaul is asking, where is David? So they take this verse out of context a little bit. The Ben Yishai, by the way, is another name for the Mashiach. And so whenever we have another Rosh Chodesh, it means there's another month. And we allegorically, we ask ourselves, Madua lo ba Ben Yishai? How come the Mashiach hasn't come? Where is Ben Yishai? In other words, when we have our new Rosh Chodesh feast, every month it's another month. And we're getting together. So we have to ask ourselves, how come the Mashiach didn't come last month? Where is Ben Yishai? And he wasn't here yesterday, he wasn't here today. In other words, it's not just that we're asking about, it's not just that David Shaul was asking, where is the son of Yishai? It's that every Rosh Chodesh, the Jewish people have to ask ourselves, how come the Mashiach didn't come last month? What did we do that he didn't come? We're always waiting for the Mashiach to come. And so it must be we still haven't fixed everything. We still have work to do. If the Mashiach, if Ben Yishai didn't come, then something's missing. It's just an interesting, taking that out of the context a little, but that's definitely the theme. Okay, let's continue on. So he's very strong with Yonason, and he insists that David is going to be killed. Verse 32. V'yan Yonason oshol aviv, and Yonason tries to talk his father out of it. V'yom elav lama yamos. Why should you kill him? Mayasa, what'd he do? You can't kill him. Verse 33. V'yito shol sachanis alav. Shol takes his stick to whack Yonason. Now, when somebody tries to hit you, you can't get them to change their mind. Now, you can discuss things, you can argue with things with people, but if you argue with a person and they feel so strongly that they're getting ready to hit you, it's time to not argue with them anymore. It means that you're not going to win that argument. But Yoda Yonason kikilahu mi'im avil hamisad David. Yonason understood that he would not get anywhere trying to convince Shaul to change his mind. 34. And again, the words are very strong. It's just so interesting, very, very colorful here. But Yakum Yonasan Mi'ima Shulchan, and Yonasan, he's very upset because he doesn't want David to be killed. He knew David was good, and he knew that it was bad for his father to feel that way. But he was powerless to change his father's feelings. But Yakum Yonasan Mi'ima Shulchan Bechor Yoav, he got up from the table in anger. Lo Ocho B'yo, and he didn't even eat anything. Ki Netza, because when a person is upset, they don't want to eat. El David ki chli mu'aviv, and he was embarrassed in front of his father. This was the whole scene. Verse 35, Yiba Boker v'yetzah, and the next morning, Yonasan went out to the field, Lamoi David. It was time for his meeting with David to tell David what happened. V'anar katan imo, and he had a young servant with him. V'yom l'nar rutz, matzan us, he said, all right, he starts shooting the arrows out in the field, and he tells the servant, go get the arrows. Asher nochem mar rutz, he said, I'll tell you where I shot them. And he shoots the arrows. So now Yonasan calls out to the lad who's way out in the field. And he says, No, the arrows are further. Go further. So the message was to David, you better run away. And then he calls to the servant, quick, don't stay here any longer. Get the arrows and pack out. And the servant didn't know that he was secretly communicating to David. Now the difference would be, they were going to try to meet, but if David was in danger, then David had to make sure when he met with Yonasan that no one else was around. Whereas if David wasn't in danger, David could just appear and relax and, you know, that. So David got the message that it was dangerous for him to be around. David heard the message. Verse 40. He said, here, take my arrows back to the city. 41. And David came out, and David understood that he would have to run away and that Shaul and his family would try to kill him. So David fell on his face. And David was also scared that maybe Yonasan would also become convinced that David was bad and David was against him. Yonasan was a loyal son, and Yonasan normally did whatever his father asked. So David bows down to his friend Yonasan three times. V'yashki ishes re'eyu, and they hug and they kiss and they cry. Ad David higdil. And it was just like such a sad situation. You know, here are these two great leaders that were so close, and they were destined to be on the opposite sides. But Yom Yonasan le David, and Yonasan tells David, "Lech l'shalom, go in peace." Ashenishba shenenu, that we've sworn between ourselves. B'shem Hashem lemor, Hashem yu beinu beinecho. No matter what happens, the two of us are committed to each other, and us and our children, bein zara out of forever. And so that's the. You know, the message of sometimes circumstance puts people on opposite ends of the field, so to speak. But there was a personal friendship between the two that in the ideal world, that what the world would have looked like if David and Yonasan could have been on the same side. But David had to run away, and he had to go to the caves, and Shaul and his men tried to kill him. Eventually, David had to run away from the land of Israel. This theme, though, is that Rosh Chodesh is coming, and that's a time for introspection. That's a time to fix things that are wrong. That's a time to notice things that maybe have been left out. And that's a time to make plans and to think about the future. And so, therefore, it's very appropriate to have this Haftorah before Rosh Chodesh to remind us that something important is coming.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.